What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host, of course, is Thomas Drantz. He covers the Canucks at The Athletic as well. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We got the crossover coming up. We're going to hear from Patrick Alvin at 1 o'clock speaking to the media. And Drantz, I'm not even going to ask you how you're doing today because we've got too much on the go for that. Too much news breaking to be worried with such things. If you haven't already heard, and you probably have by now if you're listening to this show, the Canucks made their first significant transaction of the offseason. They trade a fourth round pick in this year's draft to the Edmonton Oilers for veteran winger Evander Kane. Kane, of course, missed the entire regular season, played 21 games in the playoffs, scored 6 goals. He makes about 5.1 against the cap. The Canucks inherited all of that salary. He turns 34 in August. 1 year left on that deal. Drantz, your reaction?
I see it as a high-risk maneuver, right? I see this as introducing a player that has tended to wear out their welcome just about everywhere they've played into a highly volatile locker room environment where, you know, the Canucks, this is a team that effectively tore itself apart over the course of last season, one of the most disappointing seasons in franchise history. And the first big swing of the offseason is to bring in a guy who comes attached to, a severe amount of baggage, mm-hmm. right? We're talking about suspensions for violating COVID protocols. We're talking about multiple NHL investigations into whether or not he gambled on hockey, whether there was a physical abuse of his wife, a domestic violence allegation, both of those stemming from a messy divorce. This is a guy whose bankruptcy played out in a highly public manner across multiple years, a player who settled in 2022, a lawsuit alleging another sort of incident of assault stemming from accusations from a woman in Buffalo. It was in Vancouver in 2015 where Evander Kane had an altercation with a teammate, Dustin Byfuglien, and that caused him to skip a team's game and sort of led to his exit from Winnipeg, a trade that Tyler Myers, his new Canucks teammate, was also a centerpiece of. So that was 10 plus years ago. Now, reports out of Edmonton are he was generally a well-liked teammate, right? That he's a guy who can keep it light around the rink. And there's no denying, you know, the hockey fit to some extent that he brings. I mean, this is a player who has some defensive gaps, right? His 5-on-5 game is not flawless by any means. And he took a lot of penalties at the pointy end of that cup run for the Edmonton Oilers. 5 minor penalties in the offensive zone alone in the Stanley Cup final, 5 of them in the first period. Big reason, frankly, that the Oilers were trailing throughout that series was that Kane and Perry, to a similar extent, kind of couldn't keep their hands to themselves and kind of just keep up, play mm-hmm. the game, move their feet.
I have one take on his struggles in the Stanley Cup final, by the way, which I've seen a lot of people referencing. I'm not concerned about that. I don't think it's going to be an issue for the Canucks.
Right. And that's fair. There's also, like, don't ignore the work that he did on that line with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Zach Hyman, right? When they sort of spread out and diversified their attack a little bit against the Stars and the Vegas Golden Knights, two elite teams. He was a huge part of those series victories. I mean, he played really well in the playoffs, and that's not to obscure it. He also, you know, in the winding down minutes of game 6, carried himself poorly, I thought. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wasn't impressed by that, like, late slash on Matthew Tkachuk, gets kicked out of the game and on, like, you know, that's churlish stuff. There's a double-edged sword clearly with this player. The Canucks, however, internally do not view this as a high-risk maneuver. Like, I think that's really important. I think there's an understanding that the public's going to react a certain way to this player acquisition. But the club views it as, hey, we bought low for a fourth round pick on a guy who, you know, can score goals and play tough at the top of the lineup. This isn't about, you know, making our roster tougher and we had a fourth liner who plays 8 minutes and is never on the ice with our star guys. This is a guy who can create space and has presence to complement our star players. This is a guy who, you know, it doesn't need to be goaded into playing mean-spirited, stand-up-for-your-teammates hockey. He does it naturally as a course of, like, in the ordinary course of things. He is a true power forward, right? A poor man's Western Conference answer to Tom Wilson, which I say is a huge compliment, right? This is a guy who can give you 20 goals, 50 points, and play that game within a game, you know, even if there is a risk of him coming a bit unglued as he did in game three against the Panthers and in game six in the waning moments. So that's how the club views it. They have about $7 million in cap space left now, and all eyes should be on their pursuit of a center before the draft on Friday. They remain motivated to sell that 15th overall pick. And I don't know if they're confident that they're going to be able to do it. I think it's hard to say at this moment, hard to handicap whether or not they're going to find the right fit, but they're definitely willing, and they're willing to create additional cap space and part with some mid-range salary vets on the roster in order to give them the space they require to go out and take one more big swing on a younger veteran player who can play center. And so that's sort of where we're at. But this is a team that felt desperately that they needed to get heavier and bigger and add some scoring punch on the wings. And to a T, you know, Evander Kane matches that description. It's just that there's other aspects of this fit, other context here that I certainly do see as a risk. I don't think it's unfair to go Mount Bruff on this and say that this seems like a desperate maneuver. I think that's completely reasonable. But I will say, you know, I do think there are two sides to this coin, and I can certainly see the case for this as a lower risk, buy low type move, especially given the cost we're going to see for, you know, a variety of players who don't fit this mold, right? Yep. You know, and I've seen a lot of reaction is like, why didn't they go get Arvidsson? Why wouldn't they sign Suter? Why wouldn't they sign Besser? And it's like, yeah, I mean, those guys are, you know, Besser's a better goal scorer than Evander Kane, right? But Evander Kane can do an awful lot of stuff between the lines that none of those guys have. Like, none of those guys have that in their bag, and that's what the Canucks are valuing in acquiring Kane today.
All right. You said high risk there, and my issue with it is you want to complete that sentence with high reward, right? You want it to be high risk, high reward. My skepticism is how high is the reward, but we got lots of time to get into that over the course of the show. And joining us now to start digging more into it from Donnie and Dolly, which you can check out on Check TV Monday to Friday, 10 to noon. They join us every week here for the crossover. They are Don Taylor and Rick Dollywell. All right, fellas, we've all been waiting. We've been hoping, we've been speculating, and we got the first big move of the offseason from the Vancouver Canucks. Local product, Evander Kane, former Vancouver Giant, comes home. A fourth-round pick going to Edmonton for Evander Kane. What do you guys think?
Well, first of all, I think the Canucks knew they were not going to get any of the big names on July 1st. I mean, we've mentioned before that I don't think a lot of those big names on July 1st, I don't think Vancouver's a destination. And I think the Canucks knew that. And I think they knew they had to do something like what they did today. Obviously, a salary dump by the Oilers. Kane let Edmonton know that if you're going to move me, Vancouver's my number one choice. The Oilers really helped him get to Vancouver. And Dan Milstein, Kane's agent, told me that he's been working on this right after the day after the Oilers' last game. So you guys said all the right things. Sent a fourth-round pick. There were more than the Canucks in on this. There were 3 to 5 teams. I think this is Brock Besser's replacement. I don't know how you could bring Brock back. No. Brock's going to get $8 million plus, and they only got 7 left. But what I really think they needed was a young guy with term in the top six. But you know, you guys know that. Not a Band-Aid one-year guy, you know, and that's what they got. But we know the prices are high for those young guys. We know that. I am not surprised what happened today, considering where they were kind of striking out everywhere else.
Yeah, and you know, Thomas, I'm like you. I'm a rebuild guy. Having said that, that's clearly not going to happen, at least not in the near future with the Canucks. But what's not to like about this? I think this is a no-brainer.
I can think of a few things,
been
Donnie.
Talking about you. Well, no, sure. He's had issues in the past. I get that. I guess he's not allowed to work anywhere. But edge, toughness, yeah. People talk. He's Canadian. He's from Vancouver. He's got offensive ability, 6 playoff goals. Got shut down by Florida, but who didn't? McDavid and Dreisaitl did as well. It's a one-year deal. You don't like it. It doesn't work out. You unload him at the deadline or after the season is over. And you know what? Here's the other thing. Here's the other thing I hear about. Oh, well, you know, they just had these problems in the dressing room and the leadership group doesn't want to deal with it. Well, it's time for the leadership group, if this guy is indeed a problem, like, step up and take care of it. Like, I'm sorry, but a one-year deal, go for it. And Rick made the point, too. There's not a lot of guys who around the league who are available who will say, I want to play in Vancouver.
No, there's
it's just
not.
It's just not going to happen. Here you got a guy who says, I want to play in Vancouver, who's got an upside. Again, low risk given the 1 year left in the deal. I think it's a no-brainer. I like the move.
So, Donnie, one other thing, look, I get your point about, hey, is he not allowed to work anymore or whatever. I understand that. And I don't have a problem theoretically with taking on reclamation projects, even though I think the concerns about the locker room and those dynamics are totally fair. If Evander Kane was 27 and we were having this conversation, I think I'd be right there with you, Donnie. But he turns 34 in August. He just missed an entire regular season. How many surgeries did he have to correct all the injuries, right? I think there is as much of a chance that we're talking about Evander Kane, whose game falls off a cliff and he scores 10 goals, as there is we're talking about Evander Kane is the perfect fit next to Elias Pettersson and he scores 30. And that's the concerning thing for me is we've talked so much about their need to add talent up front. Now they've used part of their salary cap to do that. They probably have one big swing left that they can take. And there's so much risk. And I just don't know that even the best version of Evander Kane at 34 is going to move the needle too much. Look, you're right. He's going to score some goals. He's got a good shot. He's going to be physical. The fans are going to like that. There's things that will work. I just think his total game is a complete package at this point. I don't know how much it's going to move the needle for the Canucks. And that's my big concern.
And if it doesn't, he's gone.
That's fair.
We're not
That's
talking
fair.
About a 5-year deal here, right?
Sorry, but on the other hand, Donnie,
deal here.
But on the other hand, Donnie, if it works and he's indispensable, you're signing a 34-year-old, you know, next summer. I mean, if you're a rebuild guy, right? Like, this doesn't give you much upside beyond this season, even if you're right. Right. The reward is you get first dibs on signing a highly risky contract to a player type that doesn't tend to age well. Even though Evander Kane is already sort of an outlier in that, having had a bunch of good seasons after the age of 30. Look, really quickly,
does that come under the category of a pleasant problem? Like, if he has a great year, then you're presented with the pleasant problem. Like, the guys that had a great year and is a chance to re-sign with us.
It's better than the opposite, Donnie, but the Canucks don't have a lot of cap space to play with, right? So, you know, you're able to place a bet or two, and given sort of the trajectory of this team and what we think they need, you would have liked to see them use that cap space, perhaps use those resources to get players that can be like bigger wins over multiple years versus a guy at this age and stage. I mean, you can't find a comparable move that the Florida Panthers have made. Right. Like, they're always betting on the young guy who isn't proven and has runway. Right. And I just think that if you're going to sort of change this one good season, one bad season, another disappointing season. Hey, well, that season was pretty good. Another bad season trajectory that the Canucks have been on. Like, you need to think larger than, hey, well, it's justifiable. He's got a unique profile. It's 1 year. Like, we've seen this too often from this franchise. Really quick, gentlemen, I do think the extent to which Kane wanted to come to Vancouver mattered. I heard from a team source close to negotiations that there were among those other teams expressing interest, clubs that would have been willing to pay more in order to acquire Kane. I think Kane's desire to play in Vancouver actually shaped this outcome to a significant degree. And don't underrate how much that matters to a team that's found it to be tough sledding here. You don't want a group of mercenaries. You want to build a team of players who want to be here. And the fact that Kane did, I think, was a big part of the reason that the organization felt comfortable buying low in this instance.
Yeah, but Thomas, his parents are here. He's from here. It's not a big revelation that he wanted to come home and play in Vancouver. We know that this owner here has loved Evander Kane for going. This isn't the first time they've tried to get Evander Kane in this city.
Now I'm out on the deal. Yeah, now I'm out on the deal.
Okay, but it's not a big shock that he wants to play where mom and dad are. Like, you're making it sound like, oh my goodness, he wants to play in Vancouver. Well, obviously, he's a Vancouver native.
What are you talking about? But look, Rick,
well,
I was just explaining the organization's thinking on it. Beggars can't be choosers, though, Rick. Like, if somebody wants to play here, I don't care what the reasons are.
No, I get it. But What I wanted to say to you is I was told this morning that the Oilers did really go out of the way to help him and, yeah, and say, okay, you want to go to Vancouver, we will make it work in Vancouver for you if you want to go. So that's the way it was portrayed to me this morning. But when you look at July 1st, you don't have the top players screaming to play in Vancouver. Mm. You don't. I'm sorry. I've talked to plenty of agents who are saying, no, pass, no, pass. They just came off a horrible season where they were a soap opera and the rest of the NHL was watching the soap opera. And nobody wants to be a part of a soap opera. But this guy, because, you know, he's from Vancouver. And listen, I'm with Donnie on this one. We showed a video of him fighting one of the Tkachuk brothers this morning. This guy sticks up for his teammates.
After a major injury.
Yeah, after a major injury. This guy sticks up for his teammates. He brings hard skill to the Vancouver roster. Canucks have no hard skill in the top six. They don't. If you asked Rick Tocchet privately, what do you miss the most? He would have said hard skill. They had none. He brings hard skill. This is a major step in that component of the game. But you can't, you see the reaction on Twitter and in Vancouver, nobody's kind of forgetting. And Thomas, you know, all the problems off the ice and, you know, all that stuff, people are still bringing it up. And I'm sorry, but they're looking at the baggage side of it as the negative part of the trade.
I will say this, though, guys, from a business point of view, and a grabbing attention point of view. I don't know about you guys. What is it? Who sponsors your inbox there? I
can't Dunbar remember. Lumber. It's
Delaney's.
Dunbar Lumber.
Ted Priestley and those guys.
Delaney's.
Dunbar Lumber.
South Delta Minor Hockey. I don't want to talk about him.
Delaney's.
Our Delaney's inbox. Just honest to God, we set a record today with submissions. Yep. Same thing with our poll. I'm serious. I think we got more response today than we've ever had with anything. Yep. And maybe it's short term, maybe it doesn't work out. But man, did they get a lot of attention for this move.
But Donnie, you know what's not short term is the content bump. If there's one thing we can say with certainty about the acquisition of Evander Kane, it will provide content dividends for us for going into next season. Like, we're not going to be short of things to talk about.
And that's the most important thing.
And that's the most important thing. That's right, Donnie. I knew you'd appreciate that. But, okay, I think, and we got people texting, oh, upside, and look what he did to help the Oilers. One of the things I can't get past is I think he was a fantastic fit for the Oilers, right? He could go there. They have clear pecking order at the top of their lineup with McDavid and Draisaitl, who also happen to be arguably the two best play drivers in the game today. And Evander Kane fits really well as a complementary player next to those guys and even farther down the lineup. So I have no surprise that he was well-liked in Edmonton, that his teammates liked him, that he fit and was productive there. But this is the problem. Like, it's the OEL thing in reverse, right? Like, OEL's here in Vancouver. It's not a great situation. He's being asked to do too much, gets bought out, goes to Florida and thrives. This is the reverse where it's like, okay, veteran guy who is in a perfect situation on a contending team, how is it going to look here in Vancouver? And one of the reasons I was okay with them walking away from Brock Besser is he's a complimentary player. Doesn't drive play, right? We saw what it looked like for Besser away from JT Miller. That's my concern. Who is going to be the player that Evander Kane compliments? I guess you hope it's Elias Pettersson and he bounces back. But I think if Kane doesn't have that star level player that he can ride shotgun with, I don't know how much value he's going to bring to the team at this point. So, you know, not to always bring it back to Elias Pettersson, but it feels like so much of this depends on him being that superstar number one center for Kane to be a line mate with. Otherwise, I don't know how much of a difference it's going to make.
Man, you're just so bang on there. We can sit and talk about every single issue with the Canucks. Is Quinn Hughes going to stay?
Yeah.
Is Evander Kane going to be effective in Vancouver? It's all about Elias Pettersson and what's happening in the offseason and, you know, what's going to happen next season, and will he be a better hockey player than he was this past season? You're bang on. But if he is, you can see Evander Kane being the perfect perfect complement to him, such a contrast in styles, and them on the same line could be really, really exciting. Again, I think it's worth a shot.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, now what do you do, guys, with that $7 million in cap space? Do you make a play for Suter? Is that the guy that you spend the bulk of that on? Because I don't think you can spend all of it on one guy. There's going to have to be two or three more pieces that come with that $7 million. They might have to get a couple of guys that are not super well-known, that are out there, that are just really good bargain pieces, like a guy like Mike Carcone.
Carcone.
Yeah.
Carcone?
That's a guy.
Yeah. Carcone, yeah.
That's a guy. Yeah, ex-Canuck.
You're asking me?
Would it surprise me if the Canucks poke around on Carcone? No. That's a guy who had 21 goals, 19 even strength in Arizona 2 years ago. That's a guy that, you know, brings some goal scoring.
Don't you talk to these agents and don't they tell you how to pronounce guys' names?
Do you think Carcone. I was thinking the Godfather, the Carcone. But anyways, Carcone.
Who?
What? Is that a famous character in The Godfather?
No.
Are you the Corleones?
Corleone.
Yeah, that's it. Carleone or whatever it is. Anyways, hey.
Corleone.
Hey, stop the cackling, Thomas. Let me finish. This guy isn't going to cost
you
a ton.
Take the gun. Leave the Carcone.
Carcone. It's Carcone, right? Not Carcone?
It's Francis Ford Coppola.
Michael Carcone.
Michael Carcone.
That is Carcone. Like Michael Keep Corleone. You know what? I'm willing to cut Dolly some slack now that I remember his first name.
Yeah, okay, it's true. You're right.
Thank you. I was in the neighborhood. Yeah. I was in the neighborhood, Thomas. I was in the neighborhood. So anyways, listen, I checked in on Suter this morning. There's just nothing new to report. So I don't think offers are flying back and forth, guys, on Suter. I was told this morning, dead silence, but we all know things can change with one phone call, right? So
tell them about what else you've got this morning.
What?
Sorry. Go ahead, Tom. Cool. Sorry.
Let me jump in here quick because I know some stuff, and then I think what you're talking about with Pugh Suter might be another part of the puzzle piece. So I want to tell you some stuff that I know, and then I want to get your take on how it might fit together with Pugh Suter. Make no mistake, gentlemen, pivoting off of this Kane acquisition, the next 48 to 72 hours are going to be about the Canucks delivering on their main priority. And their main priority is, unsurprisingly, young veteran center. They want to be aggressive for that player. And they're willing to move out money to facilitate that acquisition, right? Whether that player goes as a make weight, right? Player and a pick in a potential trade for that guy, or whether or not a salary goes out in a separate deal. Keep your eye on Teddy Bluger. Keep your eye on Dakota Joshua. The Canucks are going to aggressively pursue a center with that 15th overall pick, unsurprisingly, over the next 48 hours. I can't handicap whether or not they'll be successful. I'm told they are prepared to make the pick, but their preference, strong preference, is to move that 15th overall pick, and they're working to do it. Now, in terms of the Suter side of this, Rick, I wonder if, from a Canucks perspective, and this is actually dovetailing with something I reported like a month ago, but never sort of kept in mind, what if it's about seeing what their options are on the trade market across the next 48 hours, and failing that, right, if they can't deliver the right fit, the player that they want across the next 48 to 72 hours. So now I'm talking about what I don't quite know, but I think it makes sense. What if at that point, that's when they might go back to Suter and sort of meet the price, right? The idea that let's keep this cap space earmarked in case the right thing shakes loose. And if it doesn't, Pugh Suter is plan B. What do you think about that is what might be occurring here?
Well, Pugh Suter, you know, do people get tired of being plan B and want to be plan A? Do you want, you know, Brock Besser felt disrespected at times this year. You know, you can sit there and say Pugh Suter's plan B, but maybe Pugh Suter wants to be plan A. Maybe he wants to have some love thrown his way.
Nikita Zadorov.
What do you think of that?
Nikita Zadorov, right, Rick?
Well, Donnie.
Last year, Nikita Zadorov?
Yeah. They spent so much time on, what's his name, that went to Tampa Bay?
Gensel.
They spent so much time on Gensel, they lost Zadorov. And he felt disrespected. Brock Besser has felt disrespected. Do you see the – maybe Pia Suter says at some point, you know what? Hey, show me some love or I'm going to feel disrespected too.
Yeah, it's definitely possible.
In fairness, if you were spending more time on Zadorov than Jake Gensel, I think you would have lost the plot, right? In fairness.
Well, okay, but but at some point you understand how he would feel. Yeah, you got to land the player.
Hold on a sec, guys. I just want to bring something up here. Rick had an interesting story regarding Manny Malhotra today.
Oh, yeah.
Which, if it ends up happening, would really piss off Canucks fans.
Yeah, boy, oh, boy. It would not surprise me, guys, if Dallas asked for permission to talk with Manny Malhotra. Dallas is the only team in the NHL looking for a coach right now. Why would they not want to talk to a young, up-and-coming coach who just guided his team to the American Hockey League Championship? You know, I've been told that, look, I'd be very surprised if they don't poke around. I don't know if, like, Thomas, you would maybe know more. I don't know if they get permission. I don't know what's in his contract. But, I mean, if you're the Dallas Stars, how are you not picking up the phone and asking for permission to talk to this guy? I mean,
yeah, if you're an American League bench boss, you basically have carte blanche to interview for NHL head coaching positions as a matter of ordinary course. I mean, the Canucks could put a new like contract extension and a significant salary bump in front of Manny Malhotra in an effort to ward his desire to interview off. But it would be very unusual and certainly outside how we'd expect Jim Rutherford to do business for the Canucks to deny permission to the Stars. You know, this was...
They can't do that.
I'm not surprised by this, Rick, because the longer the Stars went without hiring their own internal guys, the more obvious it was that they were waiting to talk to somebody, right? Like the Neil Graham, that's right. And, you know, that's what I'd been saying across the last 10 days, even as insiders kept reporting, no, they love their main guys. And it's like sometimes it helps to actually... You know, I find this, and I have to be diligent about it. Sometimes it helps to take a step back and look at the structure of things. If they were really happy with their internal replacements, if they didn't have something of a wandering eye, that would have been done last week.
All right, a couple other things before we let you guys go here. First of all, the name we've heard, I think, in connection as a trade target to the Canucks more than any other is Marco Rossi. Now, what's the first thing, I'm sure, in your unnamed inbox and ours that comes up when Marco Rossi does? It's size. Understandably so.
Yeah.
Does the acquisition of Evander Kane change your opinion on that, right? Does it almost give them license? Hey, we brought in prototypical power forward, size, toughness, all of that. Maybe that allows us to invest in a smaller player like Marco Rossi. Do you guys buy that element of it at all?
Well, you know what? When you poke around a bit and you realize that how tough it is to get. So even somebody like Rossi has an obvious flaw, and that would be his size. Is it possible the Canucks have moved off acquiring a top two center and are now focusing on getting a winger like Kane, maybe another, as opposed to a center to complement Hedl, to complement, if he's healthy, to complement Elias Pettersson? That's more realistic versus trying to get a much valued top two center. Maybe that's their way of thinking. Because he said, I don't know about you guys, but I was surprised. He said, Jim Rutherford said, I just said he as though he was God and everybody would know who I was talking about. But Jim, well, maybe he is. Jim Rutherford talking about making three trades for top six, four. That's tough to do. They made one, but I don't know. And one of them has to be a center. Maybe it's time to move off that and think, hey, how about some help for Pettersson on the wings? Somebody with some meat on them, somebody with some toughness. Kane fits that bill. Maybe somebody else, Rick.
Yeah, absolutely. And Rossi, I'm going to say the same thing I said to you guys a while back. If the Canucks had a 6'4" center, 220, that was already here as the number one center, then go get Rossi. But you got a guy here who's 170 pounds, 75, and then you're going to have a 5'9" center behind him. Well, how are you going to wear teams down with two centers that are not, you know, 6'4", 220? I would go after Rossi if JT Miller was still here. I wouldn't have a problem with it, but they just don't have a big centerman. And teams crave those big centermen, especially in the playoffs, to wear teams down. And Rossi just doesn't make sense when Pettersson's there at 175 pounds or whatever he is.
And Jamie, your question, your formulation was, does Evander Kane's acquisition change how you'd view a potential Marco Rossi acquisition? Mm-hmm. I don't think it changes it for the Canucks. I still think they're interested in this player. And I think the fact that he plays tough, the fact that he's, you know, he might be short, but he's not slight.
Sure.
Right? He's a stocky guy. I think there's interest there if the price is right. And I think that's the type of guy that they're going to be shopping for. They're not looking for perfect players or they wouldn't have acquired Evander Kane, right? Marco Rossi might not be perfect, but I think they view him as a guy who could help this team in the event that, you know, they're actually able to pry him out of Minnesota.
All right. Finally, Rick, every time you're on the station, the texts start flooding the Dunbar Lumber inbox. Juleson, 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 this one comes in. Guys, we need our weekly Noah Juleson update. I've got to do it for the people. Rick, anything new to report on Noah Juleson?
Hey, we had a text today, Donnie, in our Delaney's OK and Tyron Langley in Aldergrove inbox. One of our viewers saw Juleson shopping in Kelowna last week.
Did you go?
No, seriously. That's the best update I got. We had a viewer text us, Johnny.
Yeah, I think was he buying bananas?
I think
you're, you're telling me an NHL player was spotted in Kelowna in the summer? Stop the press.
Shocking.
Yes. Hey, you want an update? I'm giving you an update. Juleson was in Kelowna, according to Stephen Cloverdale, shopping with his kids.
What was he shopping for?
The person
bananas.
The person who spotted him was an NHL player.
Stephen Cloverdale. Hey, listen. Last time I checked on Juleson, nothing going on. He wants, I think, a one-way. But I will say this: if they let Juleson walk, keep an eye on Ethan Bear because they've liked him in the past. They didn't want to lose Ethan Bear. Remember, right, guys? But I wonder. I'm just wondering out loud. If Juleson walks, if they'd have interest in Ethan Bear.
All right.
Keep that in mind.
We got it in. Fantastic. We made everyone wait for the most important part of the crossover. Guys, this was awesome. Glad we finally had something to really talk about and dig into. What?
Sorry, can we just call out Rick, turn the Juleson update into an Ethan Bear update?
That's perfect.
What's Nikita Triamkin doing?
No, I just
clone update.
It wasn't an Ethan Bear. I just said, hey, I wonder if they'd be interested in Ethan Bear if Juleson walks. That's all I said. That's all I said.
Yeah, let's go. I for one, appreciated it. So thank you. Guys, this was awesome, as always.
Thank you.
We'll do it again next week. Thanks for doing this.
All right, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Take care.
All right,
boys.
That is Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal, which you can watch as the co-hosts of Donnie and Dolly on Check TV Monday to Friday, 10 to noon, joining us as they do every week here for the crossover. All right, we got to take a break here. Patrick Alvina is going to speak to the media at 1. We will carry that live. We can continue to react to the Evander Kane acquisition, what it means for what might be next for the Canucks, next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Strance here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their 3 locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. Coverage of NHL Free Agency 2025 is brought to you by Homes by David L. Young of Dexter Realty. Here, there, everywhere. Visit homesbydavidlyoung.com. JanPro. From waiting rooms to exam rooms and everything in between, JanPro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit janpro.ca. On July 9th, Able Auctions will sell over 100,000 square feet of flooring, over 500 police-recovered items, including bikes and tools, and over $250,000 of patio furniture. That's a lot of patio furniture, including over 100 fire tables and 300 patio chairs. There is something for every home at this auction. To buy your laminate flooring or patio heater, go to ableauctions.ca. To get your commercial or retail inventory sold at auction, email sales@ableauctions.ca. That's sales@ableauctions.ca. All right. Patrick Alvin coming up in 20 minutes here. We will carry that live, but we got some time before that to continue to dig in to the Evander Kane acquisition and also what might be next. And you're reporting during the crossover, Drance, that, hey, be on the lookout for maybe moving out some mid-salary veterans. I think that makes a ton of sense because as you look at it as it stands now, they basically, in terms of salary cap, they have one card to play, right? Like you can do one more significant acquisition and then you're starting to send dollars out. Yeah.
For sure.
So that could be Rossi. That could be circling back on Suter. But like any move like that, basically you're done in terms of significant acquisitions.
Yeah, but they're looking at priorities first, right? I mean, there's priorities, and that's what the Canucks are focused on. That they'll get to the value bucket later on if they have to. And the priority is for the next 48 hours, we should be on high alert for the Canucks to make a deal involving the 15th overall pick and perhaps a roster player as a salary cap make weight, because the type of player we're talking about, whether they're an RFA currently or a signed player, it would make things unwieldy without the Canucks sending some salary out in the deal. So Joshua, Bluger, Hoglander would fit the bill, although I don't have details that the Canucks would move him specifically. Those are sort of the possible make weights on watch for me across the next 48 hours, because you know what, while my understanding is that the Canucks would pick 15th overall if they get there, that there's some players that they like, right? That they're comfortable just adding another top prospect to this club system. Their strong preference is going to be to add a young veteran center here to really punch up the middle of their forward group. That is the goal, and that's what they're going to be working really hard at across the next 48 hours. They're going to try and make something happen here. The Kane deal sets that up. Some money will probably need to go out to facilitate that type of move if they can find the right one. My guess is that Pew Suter remains a circle back, especially if, you know, Dhaliwal's report that they re-engaged last week. I mean, what, that was 5 days ago?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that was like the priority, if that fell into the priority bucket as opposed to the value hunting, let's see what we can get bucket, you feel like there would be traction by now.
Yes.
Right? So the fact that there isn't, I think, speaks volumes. I've been saying for, what, a week and a half now that the Canucks expected both Besser and Pew Suter to hit July 1. I still think that's their active expectation here. But yeah, looking for a center, all in to try and make it happen across the next 48 hours. And that's really the biggest story that we should keep our eyes on with laser focus. It's getting harder and harder. The club, you know, I don't think they can handicap it either way. I think it would be incorrect to describe them as like hopeful that they can pull it off, but they're certainly going to try.
I still think there's a deal to be made on the Marco Rossi front. Like someone's got
increasingly, I do too.
Someone's going to have to blink there, and I really do think it's going to have to be Bill Guerin. Like all this reporting, and it's not just out of Minnesota, but you hear it out of Buffalo and stuff. And any team that has like an obvious trade candidate, and it's, well, we're only going to trade him if the team gets better, right? Like, hey, we would need a center that we like more coming back. It's like, that's not how trades work. You're not like, that doesn't make any sense. So you're going to add you're going to trade Marco Rossi plus to get a better center to some team. Like that deal is not happening. That deal is not materializing. And you're either going to have to accept that and do a different type of deal or deal with the headache of Marco Rossi as an RFA. So I think right. there are as
Which
much
is
as
a
it,
significant headache,
as much as it is clearly a seller's market. I'm not trying to dispute that. I also think some sellers are kind of living in fantasy land at this point as well about like what deals are possible to solve their problems.
Yeah, the RFA market in general, Jamie, I find fascinating. Like, I'm shocked that there hasn't been more urgency to get things tucked away on a variety of these fronts. Noah Dobson, Evan Bouchard, Matthew Knies, Will Cooley, like all of these names. Marco Rossi fits in with that. You know, I think teams should be operating in reverse, where you get your RFAs done first and then your UFAs. But, you know, that makes sense if the RFAs considering deals are and their representatives are saying, let's wait and see what the market looks like so that we have a better handle on sort of cap growth era projections.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense to me. But it's also sort of there's shared risk here because you can't use UFA deals as comps at arbitration. And so one sort of interesting wrinkle that I was thinking through is in some ways arbitration awards might lag for a year or two behind sort of the UFA deals in terms of the inflationary pressure really hitting them. So to some extent, I mean, if you're willing to, you know, wait that 5 days and be exposed, right, to the risk of an offer sheet before you can, you know, choose arbitration or be player elect arbitration on those days before you sort of put a player in a bind where they do so, you know, you might want as many deals as possible, especially if you're considering bridging a guy anyway, that are sort of awarded by an arbitrator as opposed
right.
to like, if you're a contending team, that's like if you're a contending team pressed up against the upper limit of the salary cap, that's like a legit route that you could consider, a legit angle that you could play. It's probably too cute, but it's a factor that's out there in any event. I think the Rossi thing is interesting. I think it's real. I do think the Canucks would have some interest. I've heard, you know, a variety of different things on this over the past few weeks. Struggled to kind of make sense of what's true, what's not true. But I do think that that's the sort of player that the Canucks would pay up for. Now, you know, pay up means relative things,
yes,
right? I don't think they'd part with Volander and 15th
no.
overall. But, you know, if the deal took shape and it was something like Dakota Joshua and 15 and a plus on top of it from the Canucks end, I could see something like that.
That would not surprise me in the least. Like, that exact deal would not shock me. It would be in some ways the opposite of the Evander Kane deal.
Except that we pitched it, which means it's got to be something we can't see coming, right?
That's true. It'll be something completely off the radar that we never would have anticipated. Yeah. So on... go ahead.
Just like we knew that the Canucks might go for an older player profile, right? As a value opportunity to upgrade their top six.
Well, it is.
For whatever reason, we never clicked in that it could be Evander Kane.
It is funny because, as you reported and others have reported, Matt Duchene was maybe their top target in UFA, and he was the third overall pick in 2009. No question. And Evander Kane was the fourth overall pick in 2009. So they went down the list and they're like, all right,
draft class.
Next guy up. This is who we're going for. Evander Kane. We struck out on Matt Duchene. So here we are. We've come to you now. So be on the lookout for
who was one overall?
Tavares. Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Huh. No, I mean, at some point, you got to be careful with things like
that. That'd be fantastic if Jim Rutherford was just like, I loved the 2009 draft class. Those guys ruled.
Well, I mean, except the huge Canucks fan at number two is the one you really want.
Yeah.
So it goes. Anyway, so attention turns to centers. You know, and this is sort of the other one where you asked, like, does getting Kane increase their comfort level with potentially dealing for Rossi? And I don't think they're connected at all. But I do think that, you know, in a world where you had to shed salary, having Kane in the fold might make losing Dakota Joshua less painful.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that, I think it would be more connected than the idea of, because I just don't think Rossi's viewed internally by the Canucks as, like, SMOL small.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the way that he plays and the fact that he's got that stocky, thick frame, like, it's that there's small and then there's functionally small, right? Like Nils Höglander is small, but he's not small the way Jonathan Lekkerimäki is small. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's not.
Like there's a big difference.
It's all and the key thing for me is willingness and ability to go to the dirty areas. And Rossi has that.
Yes.
And there's other things that you can do well with size, but if you can do that, I'm willing to overlook a lot of size attributes if you check those boxes, which Rossi does.
The other part of this size equation and what the Canucks are considering here, I do think preliminary conversations have occurred between the organization and Sammy Blais. And by I think, I mean, I'm telling you that for sure.
Sure.
On an NHL contract. I'll get into that a little bit more, what I sort of know about the status of that across this week. But yeah, going to be fascinating to see how things play out with those Abbotsford players. Not a ton of news coming out yet on them. I think the organization's pretty keen to let them have like a pretty stress-free couple of days celebrating their magnificent accomplishment.
That makes sense. Good for them. Because that was also occurred to me about the whole... is there a trade waiting for after Abbotsford seasons is done? Well, it's like, well, you can't trade the guy the day after they won the Calder Cup. You know what I mean? Like when he's like out celebrating.
Yeah.
Like you can, but it's like, that'd be kind of a bummer. So now it's like, well, now we got to wait for the celebration to happen. We got to let those guys bask in it a little bit. But anyways.
No, I did check in on that, by the way. And I've been told by multiple people who would know that nothing is in the drawer.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I just wanted to take a second, and we mentioned this just quickly before we got to the crossover. We got a break early here so we can be back for Patrick Alvin, but just to kind of articulate like my overall view of the Evander Kane trade, right? And you said, you know, it's a high risk move. And I was like, I would typically, if it's a high risk, you want it to be high reward. And that's where my stumbling block is for this. I don't know how high the reward is. And I was actually thinking back to the kind of debate about the ceiling path versus the floor path that we were having earlier in the week, or maybe it was last week. To me, this doesn't really fit either route. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a floor bet, I don't think. Because there's downside here that we can all recognize, both, I think, in terms of the off-ice stuff, but also the on-ice fit. And again, I don't know how much even like the best version of 34-year-old Evander Kane really truly raises the Canucks ceiling. The word that comes to mind more than any other for me to describe like how this fits into a bigger picture strategy is it's a hedge. And I think that's the best thing you could say about it is it's not low risk in terms of what might happen this season, but it is low risk for the future. It's a fourth round pick and you can walk away after this year. So to me, I'm not trying to play devil's advocate because I'm not a big fan of the deal. But I'm just trying to kind of understand the strategy behind it. And I guess it's like, hey, if you're going to take on a player with major question marks and the ceiling maybe isn't even really there, at least don't screw up the future. At least it's a 1-year screw up if it is in fact a screw up. And is that a low bar? It sure is. But that's how I can best contextualize it. Am I wrong?
Hey, yeah, low bars and bad places. The Jamie Dodd story. No, I think it's the hedge position thing, right?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's the hedge. It's not a floor or a ceiling move. It's a hedge move. And
it's a hedge move.
I don't know. There is some wisdom to that. We've talked
about
it.
Don't talk yourself into it.
No, we've talked about it. The wisdom of hedging.
Yeah.
It's not completely out of left field when you look at it from that perspective.
I don't have a problem with this team like going for it without harming their long-term future for one more kick at the can with Quinn Hughes, you know, where like before he gains the leverage of extension eligibility next July 1 and how dramatically that can change things depending on how it all plays out. Right. Like I have no problem with that. You know, the Kane ad, if he's still got game, if he performs the way he did in the playoffs and is healthy for 60 plus games, you're probably not going to look back on spending a fourth on getting him too negatively. Now you might look back a little more negatively on across a 12-month span trading Pod Colson straight up for Evander Kane. Don't love that quite so much, but hey, whatever. Who needs context? In a vacuum, you can totally understand why they did this deal. With context considered, it's a much more difficult thing to swallow. But for now, I'm still focused until I have time to take a breath after July 1. I'm so much more focused on what the Canucks are thinking in doing this trade and what it means and putting it all into context as we sort of do the first draft of history thing that I'll breathe fire and really sort of explain my take and fade position on the moves once I have a better sense of the full picture in about a week.
We've got broth to breathe fire right now anyways here on the station. And
yeah,
I understand
it.
I understand Josh did quite a bit of that as well on Canucks Brunch earlier. All right, we got to take a break here. Patrick Alvin, Canucks general manager, speaking to the media next here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Trantz. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Patrick Alvin will speak momentarily about the Evander Kane acquisition and everything else going on with the Canucks right now. But first, Able Auctions will sell over 100,000 square feet of flooring, over 500 police-recovered items, including bikes and tools, and over $250,000 of patio furniture, including over 100 fire tables and 300 patio chairs. There is something for every home at this auction. To buy your laminate flooring or patio heater, go to ableauctions.ca. To get your commercial or retail inventory sold at auction, email sales@ableauctions.ca. That's sales@ableauctions.ca. JanPro, from showrooms to stockrooms and everything in between. JanPro keeps workplaces tidy, clean, and disinfected. For a free quote, visit janpro.ca. All right, as mentioned, Vancouver Canucks general manager Patrick Alvin imminently going to address the media. And of course, the number one topic of conversation will be the trade for Evander Kane, a fourth round pick in this year's draft, going to Edmonton. No salary retention, so 1 year at 5.125 left on the Evander Kane deal. And just before we get to Patrick Alvin, I want to address a frequent text, or genre of text, that has come into the Dunbar Lumber text line today, which is that, hey, don't worry. If he's productive, 1 year left on his deal, if he's productive, they can just flip him at the deadline. We got to stop that, guys. We got to stop that. There, we can never, ever operate with confidence that the Canucks are going to flip a player at the deadline. That's over.
No. Stop it. Remove it from your lexicon.
If it happens, I will gladly apologize and praise the deal. But we have to stop.
No.
We have to stop.
I won't apologize.
Why would we apologize? We have to
There's a decade worth of burden of proof on our side.
Yes. We have to stop factoring that into any acquisition deal they make. That's fantasy until we see proof that it could actually happen.
Yeah, I mean, do it one single time.
But
do it once.
All right.
I mean, that's sorry.
Now speaking to the podium at Rogers Arena is Vancouver Canucks GM Patrick Elvian.
So I think he will do everything he can to give us what we want and what he is capable of doing too. So. Well, I think the past is the past with Evander. The last couple of years in Edmonton, I think he contributed a lot to the off-ice stuff and helping out in the society there. And having three kids here now, I think he has matured. I do believe that this gives us a chance and him a chance to see if this is a fit moving on here, and I'm sure hoping so after this year.
To get to that point, how did you determine that you think this is a guy that's not the long list of things that he has been off the ice?
Well, based on his last 2 years in Edmonton, there hasn't been any issues. I would say almost the opposites, that he's a well-liked guy. And I also know that we did our due diligence here in terms of talking to players and previous staff members as well.
Do you talk to your own players to see how they feel about it?
I know they don't want to play against him. I think that's where Evander is one of those guys that you hate to play against and you love to have him on your own team. And obviously Adam Foote was involved in this process. I did not talk to any of the players.
Last year, there was obviously a little bit of dysfunction, a lot of dysfunction in the locker room, and led to you making some moves to alleviate that. Given Evander's history with teammates, is there any concern coming out of last year that you know there could be issues that arise?
Not that I was aware of here as of lately, and I don't know what you're referring to in regards of issues with teammates in the past. We all know that there has been some stuff in the past, but again, I have no problem with personalities. As long as they perform on the ice and fit in with the team rules off the ice, I have no issues or concern with players or what they're wearing and how they're driving to the games.
We're 48 hours away from the draft. You're holding the 15th pick. Don't want you to show your hand, but how do you see Friday playing out?
Yeah, it was interesting. I was just sitting in, listening and talking to my scouting staff, who's upstairs and do the final touches here on the list. The excitement they have on some of the players that might potentially be available. So we'll see here. If talks heats up here over the next 48 hours or not.
Do you expect to pick at 15?
As of right now, I do. I haven't talked to a lot of teams of moving up. Inquired more so on potential moving down in the draft.
The last time we chatted with you, the plan was for Elias Pettersson to get on summer schedule working out. Did you chat with Elias? What's his status? How's the summer going for Elias?
I have not chatted with Elias. I know that Adam Foote have met with Elias. I know my strength and conditioning staff are in touch with players. So far, Elias have been very transparent and very excited and seems to be in a really good spot and excited to be coming back with the new coaches here.
You've been signed Thatcher Demko to an extension this summer. Is there any update on what your plan might be there
It's been a really good conversation with Thatcher and his agent, and we'll see here over the next couple days or weeks if we can get something in place.
Your boss Jim
put a little pressure on you in the last press conference at the end of the year, basically saying you're going to go out and acquire a top six center because the free agent class wasn't really going to provide that. Where are you in that mission, and how hard is it to acquire one of those guys?
Well, I think based on what you see around the league here leading up to today, it's not a lot of movements, and I do believe the parity of the league means that teams want to have players in return, and I think it's too early to tell here what will happen prior to July 1st, but I do acknowledge that you're right in terms of what's available in the free agent market. So we'll see here. We still have a couple more days to be creative and find ways, but it's definitely not for a lack of trying.
And one last thing about chemistry, and I'm not talking about whatever problems Evander may have had in the past, but as you noted, he is a very strong individual, kind of marches to his own drum in some respects. With a dressing room where everyone has talked about the leadership and needing to build on that, do you have any concerns about such a strong individual coming into a group that's maybe trying to recalibrate its leadership after last season?
It's a fair question. I do believe, again, the conversation I had with Adam Foote and the way he goes about working with the leadership group here in the summer, and the addition on the coaching staff here with Brett McLean, Kevin Dean, and Scott Young, along with Sedins, I think we have enough resources here to help building our culture and standard within the room from the coaching staff.
Patrick, fantastic to see what happened in Abbotsford this year, especially with the playoff run. Did some players there open up your eyes to maybe change what you might do in the offseason to give them the opportunity to make your run?
Well, it's a great achievement. Very, very proud for that group and the fans out in Abbotsford. Very interesting to see some of the players there, how they grow and get confidence as the playoff went on. First year guys as Kirill Kudratsev, Ty Mueller, Victor Mancini, along with, you know, guys that been up here, Baines, Carlson, Sasson. I think all those guys have put themselves in a different position here now. I think it's a healthy competition again, and I think those guys with Lekkamäki, Ratti, you know, several players that will come in here and compete for roster spots and make my decisions even harder. And based on, you know, even conversation around the league now, I think those guys sure are getting more attention in terms of assets for a franchise.
Does Archer Shelos MVP performance change the way that you view it, either signing Thatcher to an extension or moving Thatcher and having Artie come up here?
It was a hell of a performance. I'm happy for Artie. We know that he's a really good goalie, and this is just justifying that. That being said, we still got a couple of good goalies in the system there with Tolopilo and Ty Young that are more than ready to play as well. So we'll see here over the next couple of days and where things goes here with Thatcher, and we make decisions after that.
You talked about the difficulty of acquiring that top six center, parity in the league. Has that kind of proven to be a different challenge that maybe you didn't see coming when you were originally talking about it?
I think that's just credit to the league how good it is. You see how a team like Florida Panthers is built and Edmonton Oilers as well. So I think that's where the challenges are, that a lot of teams want to have established players and then future assets.
Is it fair to say that the Evander Kane trade is kind of a result of that? Are you guys seeing that?
Well, I think it's more what's available on the market than what the cost that on players that are available, and if we even would have the capital to attract them to come here or not. So I think in this case, getting a, as I said, mid six, top nine winger with the pedigree as Evander, and the cost we had to give up to get him in here for a 1 year deal fitted us perfect here.
Does that change how you feel about re-signing Pius Suter? Because he feels like a guy that could fit a lot of that.
Yeah, no, I think Pius has been very valuable for our team for 2 years, and we like him a lot. Again, I respect he's in a situation where he put himself to be a unrestricted free agent and has the option to choose where he wants to play.
Do you anticipate this team will try to create some more cap space heading into July 1?
We'll see. I don't. Again, I for me, it's not just about creating cap space. It's about seeing what options we have to make our team competitive.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
That is Canucks general manager Patrick Alvin speaking to the media in the wake of the Evander Kane acquisition, and of course also addressing some more of what they might do and just how the market stands generally around the NHL. We are also just over 48 hours out from the NHL draft starting. So as Alvin referenced a couple of times there, they've still got a couple of days to really get creative and try to make some things happen. And I think the thing that stood out to me more than anything else in that press conference, Dranser, was him referring, and I think this is 100% accurate, to Evander Kane as a middle six slash top nine winger at this point of his career. And I think I'm glad to hear that because I've seen a fair amount of reaction to the Evander Kane trade in our inbox regarding this more as a top lineup type of acquisition. I don't think it is that. So I'm glad to see those expectations kind of being set more reasonably. And when you look at it like that, okay, fourth round pick for 1 year of a veteran middle six slash top nine guy, you describe it in those terms and it makes a lot of sense. My issue is the opportunity cost, right? Of you only have so much cap space to go out and add the true top of the lineup difference makers that this team needs, that by their own admission, they really, really need. And now you've used a healthy chunk of that on, again, someone they're describing as a middle six, top nine player. So I like that there's an open and upfront honesty about just exactly where he best slots in a lineup at this point in his career. But it's also a bit of a head scratcher to devote that amount of cap space when there are such pressing needs farther up the lineup.
Yeah, and I think it's a reflection in part of where the Canucks sit in terms of the July 1 free, you know, pecking order, mm-hmm. right? Like you don't commit this cap space and you don't make this trade if you're going to get a chance to pitch Mitch Marner or Nikolaj Ehlers.
Yep.
And this club's not. And well, or they knew
you,
they weren't.
Or if you think you're going to be able to do Marco Rossi and young veteran player X, who's also really interesting.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think the way that this market has unfolded and how competitive it is, and the pessimism that I started reporting, last week?
Mm-hmm.
They're right. The organization is viewing it as like, hey, this might be difficult for us to accomplish everything we want to accomplish. You know, I think that's where they've landed. And so you get Kane done and that frees you up to take another swing. And if you can't connect on that other swing, then you still have some cap flexibility to go to Pius Suter and sign a couple of value guys, lottery tickets in free agency. Maybe you consider going long on an Atu Ratu, right? Take a chance on one of your own guys, try to lock in some upside and leave some space for guys like Baines and Sasson and Carlson and Sammy Blais to surprise you at camp and be bit players at least for this team. You know, I think that's, you know, an okay plan B. It's probably not enough, but it also, so much of this hinges on what Utah does and what St. Louis does and what Anaheim does, right? Frankly, like, to some extent, I mean, the Canucks need to get better regardless of what those teams do, but those are teams with the flexibility and assets to like blow the Canucks out of the water,
mm-hmm.
right? And blow a lot of teams out of the water, frankly. Take a serious step forward next summer. So it's like, to some extent, you know, plan B looks one way if Utah lands Nikolaj Ehlers, right? And if Anaheim is the team that lands, I don't know, XYZ dude, right? And you know, if those teams are bridesmaids on July 1 and don't make a big shake it up trade or a mega acquisition and the Canucks go with plan B, you know, I think there's at least a path given what we know Quinn Hughes can accomplish individually. And you know, the idea that they should be healthier and they should be better in goal and on and on. I thought the commentary on Pettersson and Demko jumped off from Alvin. Like, you know, they have to be in trade lists and stuff because they're both at these sort of hinge moments yep. in their hockey careers. Thatcher Demko becoming eligible for an extension on July 1 and Elias Pettersson, of course, his NMC kicking in on July 1. So, you know, they're fair conversations and fair things to forecast and talk about, but club's not looking to move either of those guys. Come on. Like, this is not where they're at. They're not more dramatically resetting the decks here. They are still in on this core, which has kind of been the defining feature of the Jim Rutherford era. And my understanding is that hasn't changed. And I've been reporting the Demko thing for what, 2 weeks now, but
yeah.
You know, really coming to a head now. The American League season is over. You could hear his tone change in talking about Shelovs too. You know what I mean? Like, there was like, Demko, yeah, we're having great conversations with the agents. Shelovs, like, oh, we're really happy for him.
Yeah, we've got Ty Young and Nikita Tolopilo too.
Right.
Yeah.
The drop in excitement level, I think, was a bit of a tell there, right? That's how you know when to call Patrick Alvin. The other time you know when to call Patrick Alvin is when his answer to locker room leadership and accountability involves Scott Young, the Sedin twins, and Adam Foote. Like, I'm sorry. That was the only answer that he gave that, like, bothered me. And it's just because, you know, and I know coaches can't say it and general managers can't really say it because, well, it brings up the question of, well, then what exactly do you do around here? But, like, accountability must come from a locker room.
Mm-hmm.
Period. Like, it must come from players. Or it's not worth anything. You know, like, it can't be from slogans. Managers can set a tone. Coaches obviously have a ton of power to influence the day-to-day environment and hold players responsible and dole out ice time. I mean, there's a ton of levers that they can pull, but they're middle management. You know, like, fundamentally, if you, and anyone can relate to this, on any team they've ever been on, whether it's a work team, whether it's a problem-solving team at the puzzle escape room, whatever. It's like, you know, the great teams, they have it because of the people and how they get along internally. You know what I mean? And if you don't have it, you don't have it. And you can tell early and confidence can snowball and you know what it looks like when it's going well. So, yeah, I mean, I just don't buy at all that, like, you know, that Adam Foote and Scott Young and the Sedin twins can be responsible for Evander Kane and making sure that he stays on the right path and that if things go badly for him personally this season, right, a bad run of bounces in the first 6 weeks or the culture fit's not perfect or what have you, like who can keep the blinders on and sort of make it better? Like, that, I think that's a major question and a completely fair one, especially given that no one could really reach JT Miller. No one could find a way to, you know, set up the dinner or set up the summit that allowed Miller and Pettersson to bury the hatchet. And then lastly, you know, I do think the idea, like, I think part of the reason that bothered me is that it rests on a false premise that Patrick Alvin for sure knows is a false premise.
Mm-hmm.
But the other part of it that irks me, I guess, is it's like, okay, just follow my logic here and tell me where I'm being unfair. Right? Because I'm sort of just like thinking through this more than anything.
Yep.
And I want you to honestly, this is like I'm thinking in real time, right? So this isn't like a fully fleshed out take yet. And I want all those qualifiers to apply as I work through this. So step one, Canucks trade Bo Horvat, right? Having
yes.
previously extended JT Miller. Okay. They then, while having at least some understanding of the past issues between Pettersson and Miller, extend Elias Pettersson. A season that goes perfectly well for the team is then torn asunder, their progress torn asunder, as the organization suffers a huge setback because of personality issues in the locker room. All of that's true, right? And the same people that made that bet that Pettersson and Miller could coexist, only for it to blow up in their face, are now saying we're really confident we've done our due diligence that Evander Kane fits in this locker room.
Yep.
Should we give that group the benefit of the doubt, or does that add to our sense of skepticism? Am I being unfair if I say, hey, I think that, you know, a culture-based bet that seems this risky to outsiders, that the organization doesn't view as risky at all, you know, maybe that's not like the area that I feel like Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford and this regime have the most like weight with me, right? Versus like when they sign UFAX on July 1 for 1 year, 2.5 million or 2 years, 2.5 million. And they were like a fourth liner in Columbus last year. And they're like, we think this guy has like upside to play higher up the lineup. I'm going to be like, oh yeah, he probably does.
Yeah. Yeah. When they sign Kiefer Sherwood or Dakota or whoever, right? Yeah. Pugh Suter. Yeah.
Right. They've done it enough.
Yeah.
They've done it enough times that I'm like, yeah, I give you the benefit of the doubt there. But when they say we're confident in the culture that we've built here after what we've seen play out and the choices that they made that led to it, I struggle with that a little bit more.
And I think it
is
also...
Is that unfair?
No, I don't think it is unfair. I think it's perfectly fair. And I think the other part of it is, and even his answer, very revealing, right? Referencing the coaching staff and the Sedins rather than the players, because this gets back to the whole lack of appetite from, I think, huge portions of the fan base to kind of give this core group, this core leadership group, which is now whittled down to Pettersson, Hughes, and Demko, right? After Bo Horvat being a part of it, after JT Miller being part of it, maybe Brock Besser too. Those guys are gone. So really, the core group, the core leadership group is Hughes, Pettersson, Demko. The idea of them getting another crack at it is because so many, like, you're not just asking any group to handle the struggles, the cultural locker room struggles that might come with acquiring Evander Kane. You're asking this group specifically to do it, and there's just nothing on their resume collectively as a leadership group to really suggest that they're up for the challenge. And again, I think the fact that Alvin didn't even really reference, like, oh, we've got the players to make sure we handle it is very, very telling in that regard. And again, you know, look, I think Quinn Hughes has done a good job as captain in very difficult circumstances, but...
Yeah, this is not on him.
No, and it's also not like this is a really young leadership group, right? Like a team just coming out of their rebuild, and it's like, hey,
no.
You know, Macklin, Celebrini, and Will Smith, we're asking you guys to set the culture now. And it's like, okay, that's a big challenge. That's really difficult, and you got to bring in the right people. It's like, Quinn Hughes is going to turn 26 in October, right? Elias Pettersson's older than that. Thatcher Demko was drafted in 2014. Like, he's been around for a while, and we haven't seen that development, that ability for those three working together as the best players and key leaders on a team to create the type of locker room environment that I think Evander Kane would really thrive in. And again, Patrick Alvin didn't even really suggest that. Oh, don't worry, those three will take care of it. So I think you add in, as you say, maybe some of the missteps in judgment from management on the character issue itself over the past few seasons to the fact that I think there's a ton of well-earned skepticism about this locker room's ability to police itself and develop that sort of culture. And you're like, you're giving them this last kick of the can to show they can develop that culture, and you're not making it easy for them. You know what I mean? Instead of bringing in like great teammate X, who everyone around the league raves about, to smooth things over a little bit, you're bringing in someone who comes with some baggage. So it's
you're bringing in someone with a long history of volatility.
Tough assignment for a group that has struggled in this regard specifically.
Yeah, and look, I mean, there's all sorts of different modes of leadership. Like, this isn't on Quinn Hughes by any means. Just like, you know, literally the captain of the two-time Stanley Cup champion right now. Like, you know, I'm telling you right now, having a louder type leader in that room in Matthew Tkachuk makes him better, because in some ways he fills in for some of the shortfalls that Barkov has in terms of the raw side of it, right? That doesn't mean that Barkov's not a great leader, right? And it doesn't mean that Matthew Tkachuk's not a great leader because he doesn't have the C on his chest, right? It's that the combination of them is critical, right? Like, in Colorado, they've never given Nathan MacKinnon the C. The captain has always remained good cop Landeskog.
Mm-hmm. Even while he was away from the game for years.
Right. The one guy in the room with the weight to tell Nate to stop making fun of his teammate that's gone for an extra helping of cookies. No, and what like, that matters, right? Like, there's a reason why one of those guys is captain and one of those guys isn't, right? And so, you know, I mean, it's not just about, like, who's a great leader and it's being one. Like, there's dynamics to this. There's levels to this, right? And that, I think, is where, you know, the concerns, like, as voiced by Trevor Linden, right?
Mm-hmm.
When in his appearance, where was he appearing?
Global, Jamie? Global, I believe.
Oh, they're not affiliated with us.
No.
Never mind. But he noted bringing this into a locker room that, you know, has already had its issues given Kane's history, like that, you know, exceeds his risk tolerance anyway. And it's like, okay, you know, it's one thing to hear me say it, right? You know, I'm not exactly noted for my athletic prowess. But Trevor Linden, I think we can all agree, like one of the best leaders in franchise history. And that's his read on the situation. I think we should weight that pretty heavily, no?
Absolutely. I would love also for Trevor Linden just to be like, and I know I think he was on already and it broke and they got his reaction, but like for Trevor Linden to be this like guy we call to react to Canucks news now, that would be a fantastic late career evolution for Trevor Linden. All right, 650.
I mean, he'd be great at it.
It'd be awesome. Are you kidding me? It'd be fantastic. Yeah. I loved it. That was one of the fun. I saw it pop up on my Twitter feed. It's like, we're getting Trevor Linden live reacts now to the Evander Kane trade. This is fantastic stuff.
One of my all-time favorites, by the way, was when the New York Rangers acquired Marian Gaborik.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like the Rick Nash era New York Rangers at the same time that they had Rick Nash. And I think it was like, you know, it was on the former 1040 station that used to be in Vancouver before 650 existed. And Mike Gillis was asked what his thoughts were of a potential Rick Nash, Mike Gaborik, or Marian Gaborik partnership on a line in New York. Like, couldn't that be so potent? And his reaction, sounding bored as hell, was, "There's not enough pucks to go around." Of course, he was dead right, by the way. Great take, but it was the delivery that's like stuck with me to this day. So good.
Fantastic. All right, we will take a break here. We got one more segment left. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and still tons of thoughts coming in. So we'll try to dive in and read some of your thoughts, continue to parse through what Patrick Alvin had to say when he addressed the media at Rogers Arena. Final segment of Canucks Talk next on Sportsnet 650.
Not that I was aware of here as of lately, and I don't know what you're referring to in regards of issues with teammates in the past. We all know that there has been some stuff in the past, but again, I have no problem with personalities. I, as long as they perform on the ice and fit in with the team rules off the ice, I've no issues or concern with players or what they're wearing and how they're driving to the games.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at dunbarlumber.com. Guests on Sportsnet 650, call in on the hotline powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on, and not on our show, but on the People's Show on the Power West hotline, that Elliot Friedman will be calling in to weigh in on the Evander Kane trade and what it means for the Vancouver Canucks going forward. What time is that, Dom?
3:10.
So make sure you tune in for that. Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, 3:10 on the People's Show later today here on the station. It's never too early to get your Vancouver Giants season tickets. Tickets start at under $19 at vancouvergiants.com/season tickets. All right, let's take a second here to dive into the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. And a lot of thoughts coming in. As we said on the crossover, it's been a very, very busy day in the inbox.
It's a good day for bad takes.
Yes. You know what? It's a good day for takes. It's a good day for takes of all variety, of any and all sorts. And yes, some of them, not so great.
I will say this one is like, look, if you have sort of like one of those inflexible moral stances on some of the things that Kane has been accused of. Now, he's generally not been charged, and NHL investigations have usually found insufficient evidence to punish him in any way. But you know, some of the accusations leveled against him coming out of his divorce, you know, are troubling enough that if you're like, I would rather not root for that person, I'm not going to disagree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I understand where you're coming from, but shy of that, like other than that very significant qualifier here. I can see the vision on either side. Like, I can see why you build a hedge position and take a shot at a top six forward and view it as a unique profile, the sort of heavy guy that everyone knows that this team is just crying out for, and say, yeah, he's 33 and he's coming off a season in which he missed all of it, but even the NHL doesn't believe he should have missed all of it. And he performed well in the playoffs. And we think there's still game here. So this is a good buy low for us. Like, I can see it. And I actually don't hate that it's a good buy low in which the club is out free from the commitment in a year if everything goes pear-shaped, not just in terms of Evander Kane's impact, but in terms of the wider arc of this team, right? I mean, a year from now, and granted, you know, possible Demko extension sort of changes this logic, but a year from now, if Demko is back to being a really good goaltender and the Canucks have a top five tandem and Elias Pettersson is, you know, not all the way back, but like a 75 to 80 point guy who's driving play again, 5-on-5 and looks like he has juice. And Quinn Hughes remains one of the five most impactful skaters in the sport and the most impactful defenseman from a two-way perspective. You know, that's this team probably makes the playoffs and, you know, still hinges on what Hughes decides to do. But you know, you could be in a totally different spot with a totally different level of desirability in courting free agents, right? In having teams or players be willing to
see that. I don't know if it does change that though, because it's a 1 year deal right now, and there might be
no.
There might be an extension, but
it's not going to change because of Kane. It's going to change if this team has some success and is able to keep their star guy.
Sure, but you're betting on the players you bring in to like I just don't know how much he's going to impact the success. That's it for me. Right. Like I get what you're saying about the off ice stuff as well, but just from an on ice perspective, like I can't get past the defensive issues and the lack of play driving evidenced in his recent seasons in Edmonton. And go ahead.
Yeah. No, just the picking pucks off the wall in the defensive zone thing is like, you'll notice a lot of times, and you saw it a lot against the Panthers, like he just doesn't get out of his zone in those moments where you've got to earn the clear. Like, you've got to earn the clear, or you've got to make the pop pass back into the middle at the center who's low, slow, and available. And he, like, really struggles in that specific aspect of the game, which is wild, because as an F1, right, taking away the wall as a forechecker, he's, like, exceptional. But in his own end, it's never come together for him. I don't know why. But that's, you're going to see, like, possessions where the Canucks should have earned the clear and don't. You're going to see those when Evander Kane's on the ice.
Yeah.
Mark my words.
And I think like the most likely outcome for this, in my perspective, is that he's going to do a lot of things well, and he's going to do things that people like and people like to watch. And, you know, if he's healthy for most of the season, he's like, you know, 20 goals, some big hits, physical, plays with an edge, all of that. Yeah, that's absolutely in play. And I think there's going to be a temptation to look at that and say, well, see, hey, you got exactly what you were hoping for. And maybe it won't even go sideways off the ice in the locker room. I just can't help but think, like, even in that scenario where it's, you know, 20 goals and bringing the other stuff on the ice, like, are they going to outscore their opponents 5-on-5 with Evander Kane on the ice? I'm not sure that they are, because I think the defensive issues are so significant. He can shoot. He can shoot, and he's going to score goals, and that's always extremely valuable at the NHL level. But I was also looking, like, not this regular season, which he missed, obviously, but the previous one where he played, like, the Edmonton Oilers were outshot 5-on-5 when Evander Kane was on the ice with Draisaitl. By a small margin, but still, it's like Leon Draisaitl is one of the best play drivers in the NHL. They got outshot when he was on the ice with Evander Kane. It's like, that's hard to do. That's hard to do. And for a team that desperately lacks those top-of-the-lineup play drivers, maybe Elias Pettersson gets back to that, and maybe we're having a very different conversation as a result. I just think he, at this point of his career, he so clearly needs to be a complementary forward. And not just a complementary, but like complementing a really high-end play driver. And if he doesn't have that, I think there's going to be some flash, but I don't know how much substance there's going to be to the on-ice product.
Yeah, and look, that's fair. I mean, you can't divorce, like, when he was playing on a line with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Zach Hyman, and we're all like, wow, that line is actually carrying play. The Oilers don't usually carry play without McDavid or Draisaitl on the ice.
Yeah.
It's like if you were to rate those three players in terms of true talent, Kane ranks third.
Yep.
Right? Like, with a bullet, you don't even have to think about it that much. You might have to think about Hyman or Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, but you're not thinking about Kane. So And then, you know, the truth is like, yeah, I mean, his with or without you numbers across the board in the playoffs, even though he was back in the lineup and his impact was absolutely felt without question. I thought he played pretty well. You know, they weren't great. Like, he's definitely not a play driver at this point in his career. He's not slow, but he's not a speedster.
No, he's not a burner.
He can be a rush scoring threat, but he's not a burner. He's a, what you're hoping for, I think, here is, you know, again, like sort of a diet version of Tom Wilson.
Yep.
A guy who can be like turn games with big hits and stand up for your teammates, his teammates. And, you know, you're hoping for 2025 and that he can play in your top six, but not be responsible for driving one of those lines. And maybe that's with Pettersson. Maybe it's with Hedl. Maybe it's with incoming young veteran center X. But yeah, I mean, I don't hate that bet from a hockey perspective. Like, I can see the logic of doing this deal. I just, you know, I'm a little like the club really views this as a low risk deal because there's only 1 year on the contract. And I just cannot see it that way given Kane's lengthy track record. Like, we've seen this story across the last 10 years. Like, nothing has ever been simple with this guy once. You know, there's, yeah, I mean, you grew up in Vancouver. I grew up in Vancouver. Like, there's trails of stories and trails of real controversies with like significantly reported controversies and battles with creditors and his ex-wife and, you know, obviously the what devolved in Winnipeg in that locker room when he was a much younger man, and the fact that Buffalo Sabres team, right, with like the Kane, Eichel, Reinhardt, like, had so much talent and could never get off the mat, and you know, and then his conduct in game six of the Stanley Cup final was, I don't think it's off base to be like, that sucked.
No, I don't think it is at all.
Like, because it sucked. I don't know. I like that it's clear that Evander Kane has the chops and the know-how to win playing heavy hockey at the toughest time of year, because I think he does. I don't think there's like an element of Evander Kane where, like, when the going gets tough, he's not up to the challenge or doesn't have the fire in his belly. He does. He might have too much fire in his belly, because I think what is true is, like, you know, that was one of the sorest loser displays we've seen. In like, short of what, like, the Phoenix Coyotes not shaking Dustin Brown's hand. Like, I can't even think of other examples where you see conduct like that at the end of a game six. And guy hates losing. I'm not going to criticize him too much for that. But, you know, there's a balance to these things. There's levels to this. There's a way you've got to conduct yourself. And, you know, I don't, like, oh, it's all in the past, says Patrick Alvin. It's like, I don't know. I saw some pretty troubling behavior from him like 2 weeks ago on my television, like stuff that I didn't like 2 weeks ago. So I struggle with all of that, right? Like, I can't come around to seeing this as a low risk deal, but I also can't come across, or I can't get to the point of seeing this as like, you know, a completely wild, reckless bet.
Yeah. I think that's fair. It's just, that's what I kind of said. Like, it's just in this weird middle position where it doesn't significant to me. It doesn't significantly raise the ceiling. It doesn't significantly raise your floor either. And I just think, like, ultimately, let's put it this way. I think the content to, like, on ice substance ratio is going to be completely out of whack for Evander Kane. You know what I mean? I think we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the things he is doing, sometimes the things he isn't doing as well for this team. And ultimately, he's probably going to perform like a, you know, as Patrick Ovechkin said, like a middle six / top nine winger with some legitimate strengths and some legitimate serious drawbacks. That's fine for a fourth round pick on a 1 year deal. It's just also so different than what we've been talking about in the weeks leading up to this moment, which is the difference maker, the needle mover at the top of the lineup. And I do think some fan reaction is still colored by the name brand of Evander Kane, you know what I mean? Which is, you know, former fourth overall pick who has these some really impressive seasons on his resume. I just don't think you're getting that type of player at this stage of his career in Vancouver. And so ultimately, it's just for all of the controversy and all of the takes and the really positive takes and the really negative takes, I suspect the truth is it's not going to have that big an impact one way or another on the Canucks season, except as, you know, taking up the salary cap space to potentially prevent other moves. And reacting to what we heard from Patrick Alvin in the inbox, 650-650. Jeff from Mission says, that was a bit of a beige flag, wasn't it? It wasn't a white flag, but it was a bit beige. And I think what he's getting at there is they weren't fully waving the white flag on the idea of going out and kind of this roster remake and accomplishing what they want to accomplish. But they're also kind of acknowledging that the grand vision that Jim Rutherford initially laid out of we need two, maybe even three impact forwards, they're preparing us like that's probably not going to happen. That's not in the cards. That's just not what the market looks like. We're not going to be able to get that done. Not a full white flag. They can still take a run. And Alvin said, hey, we've got 48 hours here, a couple of days to get creative. But there certainly exists a possibility that this is the most significant addition the Canucks make. And we'll see. It might not be. I'm not going to get, as you say, pre-mad about it. But I think that formulation from Jeff from Mission of, you know, not a white flag, but maybe a bit of a beige flag on that front, what we heard from Patrick Alvin.
Yeah, fair. I think there's a lot of beige flags. And I think there's some red flags.
Yeah.
I think it's like that beige flag looks awfully red. I think there's some meaningful red flags. I don't even think we have to be that polite about it.
Uh-huh.
There's some red flags and there's some reasons to like the deal. You know, I'm a big fan of Evander Kane, the hockey player. I'm not a person who has a lot of confidence in this locker room environment. And I'm not someone who has a lot of confidence in Evander Kane's ability to make the best of a situation that's already challenging, you know, with or without another big personality, which, you know, he is thrown into the equation, right? Like that just all of it exceeds my risk tolerance, Jamie, to be
yep.
totally honest with you.
Saskatchewan Joe texts in, is it safe to assume they are kicking the can down the road on big game hunting for now? I don't think they're kicking the can down the road. They might be getting ready to kick the can down the road if nothing materializes in the next 48 hours. And, you know, that's why, as you were making the point in the crossover with Pew Suter, do we see the circle back on the weekend if they're not able to get something done, a bigger move done at the draft? And then you're really into kind of plan B, let's shore up our depth chart, bring in some defensive, you know, retain some defensive solidity in Pew Suter, and then see where we can go later on in the season. Because again, as I said earlier, like if you sign Pew Suter to, you know, a $4.5 million deal, what, you're down to $2.5 million in cap space at that point?
Yeah, that's it.
And then you're
well, and then,
that's
then,
it. Then you have to send guys yeah. out to make further additional, to make further significant moves. So I think
yes.
that will be the real
to make further modest moves.
Yeah, I mean, you could do like a $2 million player or something.
You couldn't really because you have to, you know, that's three 800K guys. Like, that's your depth.
Yeah, that's fair. But I think that will be the point where we can really say they're kicking it down the road. If the Pew Suter extension is, okay, hey, we tried, we struck out, we're going to keep our powder dry, and we're going to see what develops, what shakes loose come November or December.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, it's fine. You can make the playoffs with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just can't. I don't believe that you can just make the playoffs and anything can happen. But I still think this team does, right? And that's a more material disagreement that I'll always have, it seems, with, you know, the Canucks, with whether it's Jim Rutherford or Jim Benning before him. And the fact that so many people seem to subscribe to that theory when they're hired by the Canucks makes me think it starts well above management. But I don't believe that. I believe you need to build an absolutely great team. And even then, you probably still need some luck on the injury front, right? I mean, how does that Stanley Cup final look different with Zach Hyman if Ekholm doesn't get hurt late in the year, right? I mean, you still need more. But you need to have such a high baseline to even have a shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the proof is in the pudding with how few teams are making it to the Cup final. Like, this is not that stretch from, you know, 2009 through 2018, basically, where, you know, like every year was a different final matchup, right? Like, where I think it was across that stretch, you had something like 18 different teams contest the Stanley Cup. Right. And it's like, we're not seeing that now.
No. Nope.
Right. We're seeing, we just saw back to back. but like we've only seen two Eastern Conference teams in the finals across the last 6 years, and we've seen Edmonton make it twice from the West, Dallas once, Vegas once, Montreal once for some reason, and Colorado once, and they won, right? I mean, that's nine teams, like half as many teams in the 7 years have made it as made it the previous 10. This is not a parity-driven league anymore. This is a calcifying league. And this is a calcifying league where that's going to accelerate because star players have a bigger impact on outcomes, right? And because a rising cap is going to further create a dynamic of player power, one that you're already seeing shape. Like, first of all, it shaped the Evander Kane trade in that Kane chose Vancouver, but it also is going to shape the Canucks' short-term future in terms of what falls out with Quinn Hughes. It's shaped, obviously, what happened with Matthew Tkachuk. Like, the Florida Panthers mini cap era dynasty was shaped by that factor too, a player literally exercising his pre-agency rights to choose his destination. And you saw it with Duchesne, right? Like, it also guided us here because you saw the Duchesne decision to take an awful lot less than he could have gotten in Vancouver or elsewhere because he was happy with where he is. There's four or five teams that are going to be in an Imperial era. Mitch Marner, if he decides to sign in Vegas, that's going to be another example. We'll see how things play out with Bennett and Marchand and Ekblad and how much money is left on the table by various Florida Panthers players, but we expect it to be significant, right? I mean, Bennett's 10 times 7 easy if he hits the market. Easy. And if he signs 7.5 times 8, like, that's a $10 million gap. Doesn't even want to hear anyone out, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's going to speak volumes. So, you know, the risk that you run into is this, like, calcifying cycle, like a self-sustaining cycle where you stay bad so players don't want to come play for you, and you can never catch up on that sort of recruiting loop. And I guess the Canucks' vision here is we need to get momentum back. We need to get momentum back so that players want to play here again the way they frankly did last summer. And Evander Kane's a guy who can help us do that and actually wants to be here. And we need to make sure we're not on the elevator going down at this critical moment in franchise history, because it's going to take a decade to come back up if we fall into that cycle. And so that's what they're trying to do. I don't think it's a bad thing to try and do, but I think it's super fair to have a lot of skepticism about their ability to pull it off.
And I think to me, ultimately, the skepticism is like, even if Evander Kane has a great season for you, how much does that change the perception? Because it's a one-year deal, right? And how much does just making the playoffs change that perception? I guess we'll see. We'll see if they are able to make it, how much it does change that perception. But that's, again, to bring it back to kind of the lack of ceiling, the lack of upside, that's the concern for me, is I don't know if this is the type of move that we're ever going to look back on and say, you know, that really changed the path forward for the Canucks. Feels like a bit of a Band-Aid move in a situation where I think people were hoping for a lot more. But, again, I want to be fair. We'll see how it plays out, but also we'll see how the next couple of days play out leading in to the NHL draft, and if they are able to get something done, get something bigger done before free agency opens next week. All right, that is the show for today. Thank you to everyone who listened. Thank you to everyone who texted in as well. Always fun to have these kinds of shows when we're reacting to big Canucks news, and that will continue on the station for the rest of the day. As a reminder, Elliot Friedman will join the People Show at 3:10 here on the station to chat about the Evander Kane deal and what might be coming up next. We didn't get a chance to chat with Jason Bukala today. He'll be on the show tomorrow. And we are really in the thick of it. Draft on Friday, free agency next week. So going to be lots of fun coming up. Keep it right here on Sportsnet 650.